The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome to It Came From The Radio.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing already. No, you're good. You're doing good.
Naturally, because you know, Mark Torres doesn't understand holiday etiquette whatsoever. We are on
traffic,
live.
Right?
Yeah, we are on live for Easter. Welcome to It Came From The Radio for this Easter of 2000.
Wow, you've been away for that long.
I've been away for a little while. I absolutely have. And apparently Mark is on his way in, but he's stuck in traffic because, like I said, he doesn't understand holiday etiquette and traveling and any of that. So here we are. We're live. We don't have any news. We have no information. We're waiting for him to show up. So it's me, Hassan Godwin. I'm one of your hosts, though not the senior correspondent, just one of the middling correspondents, I guess. I'm here with engineer Brian.
Hey,
hello,
hey.
Brian. And we're killing the dead air. That's basically what we're doing right now, waiting for Mark to show up.
Well, that's rather accurate.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're doing. I'm not even home. I'm elsewhere. I'm about to have Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Hey, look at that. That's right. That's because I'm in 2028.
Yes,
right now.
Yes, you are.
That's what the problem is. I'm about to have Easter dinner. And I discussed this with Mark earlier today, Brian. I was like, is there going to be a show today? And he was like, why shouldn't there be a show? And that's my best Mark impression. And I'm like, well, because it's Easter, you know, the resurrection, you know, that kind of little things like that. And he's like, well, does entertainment stop during Easter? I'm like, yeah, some of it.
That is true. Talk about dedication as he gingerly walks into the studio.
There is he ginger? Is it gingerly?
He gingerly walked into the studio. And his mic is on. He doesn't know it yet.
I didn't.
I guess he knows it now.
Is it on there?
Do not insult anyone.
Oh, that's your job.
Absolutely.
Well, you know,
Mark.
As we all know, it is an Easter holiday, but, you know, the show must go on, as they say.
Wow.
And as I mentioned last week, we would be here live, so, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't listening.
All of you who are listening in and who decided to join us right here on WGBB. Did you mention what would happen if they're missing any part of this on the air?
No, I didn't. I was making fun of you and the fact that we're here on Easter with Brian. So that's all yours. You can go for it.
Okay. Well, if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us in the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see me finally making it into the studio with Brian, our engineer, right over there. Unless you are celebrating Easter and you decide to listen to us in the future, which would be your present, which is technically our past. So you'll be listening to us
for this.
Talk about something else for the following week. Unless you're looking at the web camera a week from now, which would be our past, but
Mark,
your present.
Mark, move on, dude.
And then you'll see
us talking
about something else. So I'm going to take it away with the news.
Please do.
As it has been for this year of 2014, the news is brought to you, in part, by the Red Bastards at Belmore Towing. If you want to get screwed over for the holidays, they are your man. Located at 2720 Merrick Road in Belmore, New York, they were practicing in unscrupulous yet very legal business practices. So remember, that's Belmore Towing in Belmore, New York.
Oh, boy.
So let's see.
Someone has a grudge. Someone holds on to a grudge for a long time.
Well, you know, I can kind of identify with Mark because you know, I've been trying to scrutinize, you know, like when I take my car in to have it fixed with to people I don't know, you know, I'm not sure of, and I'm kind of like almost at their mercy. I do question, you know, like some of their practices and how they know they got you by the kahunas.
Exactly.
You know? Well, thanks a lot, Brian.
No, you're welcome. Anytime.
Thanks for being on my side there.
Next time.
There's always a reason I try to instill, and it just gets shot down. Okay.
I got you back next time.
Yeah, right.
So, in a recent interview, TMNT, Teenage Mutant Turtles, for you non-fans, co-creator Peter Laird is politely expressing disappointment in his new look of his creations. He says, "It's interesting and well done, and I think it points up one of the big problems, for me anyway, with the new look created for the upcoming movie, with the noses and the very expressive lips. Their faces look too human. Perhaps it is just my own personal preference, but the noseless beak look, in my opinion, is a great way to immediately show that these creatures are not human. They're mutated reptiles. Creatures. The changes to the basic design of the turtles seem to fall together into fixing what is not as broken category. It's altogether possible that within the context of the new movie, these designs will work well and not seem odd. But I still want to point out that Jim Henson's Creature Shop team did with their rendering of the turtles in the rubber and paint are the best translations of the turtles as Kevin Eastman and I created them. One thing that comes to mind is how cool it would be if someone did the CGI versions of those same Henson designs with all the incredible flexibility and seamless action potential available with today's CGI.
Well, the problem is you got Michael Bay. Whoops. Yep. Yeah, that's it. I'm back on that board.
He goes on to say, What I have always found out that the accidental, somewhat random series of events culminating in the creation of the turtles to be a significant part of the charm of the story. Somehow, retconning it to make the origin as a result of the deliberate action seems like a mistake. However, perhaps the writers have found a clever way to make this seem more plausible. We'll have to watch the movie to find out.
So he's kind of putting in his I quietly protest about this, but still put money into our pockets anyway by going to see to find out whether I'm right or wrong.
Well, I find it interesting that as a creator or co-creator, he has no say at all.
Well, he sold it. They sold the rights to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so he wouldn't. First of all, he probably wouldn't have any say anyway, because once in order for them to make a movie, they would have to buy the rights to be able to depict it.
Right.
In movie form, in which case he has sold his ability to weigh in any way, shape, or form. So that happens a lot with writers when they sell their books. You know, they sit home and labor to write a 500-600-page book, and then some, you know, movie producer comes along, gives them $100,000 to, you know, maybe $1 million, and says, "Thanks for your book," and then he goes out and proceeds to cut it to pieces and basically depict it any way he wants, and the writer has nothing to say about it. I suspect the same situation is true with Mr. Eastman and Mr. Laird. So he wouldn't have had anything to say about it even if he still owned the publishing rights, but I do believe he also sold the publishing rights a long time ago.
But so, in certain cases, they do bring on the creators as consultants.
Yeah, sometimes.
To make the product better, which is like J.K. Rowling was heavily involved in the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, but she didn't sell the ultimate rights to it.
Oh, okay.
And then she also worked in, the book was such a hit, she worked in a deal that she could become an executive producer. So she got in on the movie-making process of her book as well. These guys, I don't think, were able to do that. And plus, back then, when they would have sold, when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were the huge Harry Potter-sized craze that it was, and when people our age always remember how big the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were at one time, they probably didn't have the foresight to negotiate or work in, you know, producer deals and stuff like that with any movie studio that was going to depict their creation. So, you know.
Well, speaking of
and also it's Michael Bay. Michael Bay tortured and destroyed the visuals of Transformers. So, you know, it's natural that he was going to mess up the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
So you're saying, how dare people expect him to not mess up stuff if that's his thing?
No, it's not that. I'm just saying it's natural to you know, it's a natural evolution that he's going to take it and put his own spin on it because he thinks he knows better. And, you know, the fans are going to side with him because that's going to make a good amount of money. And then he's going to feel, you know, vindicated, and he's going to continue to do that stuff. Nobody votes with their wallet.
That's true. Speaking of people making deals with companies, David Fincher was ready to sign a contract to direct the Aaron Sorkin scripted Steven Jobs biopic on one condition, that he would be allowed to cast Christian Bale as the lead. One condition turned to two conditions, as he now wants $10 million to direct. The executives say that Fincher's demands are quote-unquote ridiculous. He's not doing Transformers here. He's not doing Captain America. This is quality. It's not screaming commercially. He should be rewarded with success, but not up front. Of note, Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher's last collaboration was The Social Network, which won 3 Academy Awards.
True.
So they're saying, no money for you. You can't make the movie.
What's the movie again?
They want to make a new Steve Jobs movie.
Oh, about Steve Jobs. Okay, I gotcha.
So,
well, yeah, because they suspect it'll be of the same caliber as a Social Network, which is almost about the same kind of personality. But yeah, I get it. $10 million is a lot of money to ask up front for a movie that's probably going to just develop a niche audience and not going to be, you know, X-Men, you know, Days of Future Present. So,
you're signing with the studios this time.
I'm just saying it's the idea of not paying someone $10 million in one sitting is reasonable.
Okay.
It's reasonable that they may not want to do that, right? You know, right from the start with no guarantees that the movie they're going to recoup their losses. If they get up the budget $10 million, if it's a $20 million movie in the first place, it just turned into a $30 million movie just to pay the director to do it.
Right.
So, you know, all advertising and production costs aside, we're still going to have to pay a ton of money just to have this guy show up every day.
Who, you know, worked with the same writer and made a movie which won Academy Awards, 3 of them.
Yeah, made Academy Awards, but how much money? We'd have to do research, because it's a follow-up question, but how much money did The Social Network actually make back for the studio versus how many accolades it got?
Right. Okay. That's a fair assessment, because it wasn't that much. I can tell you that based on the information that I have.
Hey, you worked there. How many people went to see it when it was out?
We didn't even play it.
Oh, okay. There you go.
It wasn't even available in a theater near you. Speaking of movies coming out, writer-director Savage Steve Holland, best known for his work on TV shows like Eat the Cat, Kenan and Kel, Drake and Josh, and Zoe 101, as well as VIP with Pamela Anderson. Also, he produced films. He wrote and directed movies such as Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer. Is making a return to the big screen with the new movie called Multiplexing, which is about a small town multiplex that gets spun into a whirlwind by the news that a major tentpole is coming to make its world premiere there. The stars are a group of local kids who see this as a surprise of a lifetime opportunity to brush shoulders with the stars and the filmmakers that they worship on the big screen.
Okay. Wow.
Not a fan of Savage Steve Holland?
No, I don't really know that much. I know the products that you just mentioned, like Eat the Cat and whatever, and Key and Peele. I mean, what's his name?
Kenan and Kel.
Yeah, thank you. wasn't it the Good Burger guys?
Yes, Welcome to Good Burger, Home
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I know his work. So I know him, but, you know, all right, that's great. We'll see.
Well, he has such a unique storytelling style, and his comedy is way off there.
If you ever saw Good Burger, no.
Well, the movie I most remember him from was Eat the Cat, but there was the movie Better Off Dead. And it was one part in the movie was this foreign exchange student was there, and the local kid was trying to get with her through the entire movie, and she didn't speak any English.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it was revealed that she knew English the whole time, But she didn't care to sing it because she didn't want to get there with the guy.
Because she didn't want the guy she was living with to get romantic attachments to her. He was already creepy.
Exactly. So that kind of humor was right up my alley.
All right.
So
the Better Off Dead is a great movie, and it almost got me killed once. So, you know, for being a great movie.
So, all right.
Definitely look forward to his new movie.
After all these years, he is coming back. So, hooray for him.
Wonderful.
Speaking of all these years.
How did he do it?
According to a Hollywood Reporter, a sequel to the 21-year-old movie, Mrs. Doubtfire, is moving forward at Fox with Chris
21
McClung.
21 years old, only means it came out in 1992. It's not that. It's not like an ancient movie.
21 years is a long time.
That's a long time. That's nothing. That's a generation. That's nothing. It's a blink of the eye in human history.
In the blink of the eye of human history,
right.
Mrs. Doubtfire is coming as a sequel with the original director, Christopher Columbus,
yay,
and star Robin Williams are set to reunite for the film.
Nice.
And news that had just popped up before I left for the station, turns out that the girl child actor that was in the movie, she has decided that she will want nothing to do with this movie.
Oh.
And she was quoted as saying that she has made some lackluster movies and she's never done a sequel, so she doesn't want to start doing that now.
Well, yeah, the Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams, which probably will get a lot more attention than the few lackluster movies that she's made, now she's going to take a stand.
Yes.
All right. Okay, that's good thinking.
And
Robin Williams has got a TV show that's still on the air.
Barely. Barely.
Yeah, but it's still on the air. People know who Robin Williams is.
Yes.
You described her. You embellished her as child actress that starred in the previous Mrs. Doubtfire movie.
I couldn't remember the name, and I didn't have time to write it down.
Right. You know why you couldn't remember her name? Because of all the great movies she's done since then. And now she's decided not to be in the movie with the Robin Williams person, who you do know. Who you had no trouble recalling or mentioning
here.
He was
Popeye.
Huh?
He was Popeye.
He was Mork before Popeye. So anyway, you know, that just goes to show that that might be probably a bad business move.
Probably.
Probably.
From the rumor department.
I love the rumor department.
Disney has plans to make a Peggy Carter series based on the character which appeared in Captain America 1, 2, as well as the Marvel 1 short of the same name, and she was also in the comic books. But now that Hayley Atwell, the actress, has agreed to reprise her character, it is now all but official. According to Hollywood Deadline, Agent Carter will likely be a limited 13-episode series used to bridge the fall and the spring portions of Season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, wonderful.
So to keep people interested and keep that Marvel machine going, they'll put something in between.
Well, it's official that the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. get into Season 2.
Well, so, we all knew that was going to happen.
Oh, well, we didn't know it was going to happen.
I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, you knew,
yep,
right? That doesn't mean we all knew.
Oh.
You said we all knew, okay? There you go.
We all meaning myself.
Yes, there's a wonderful Mark Torres, the royal we.
Yes.
Anyway, now it is official, I suppose, for the rest of the people who only live here on Earth and are not sentient beings with prescient powers, that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to get a Season 2.
And I'm still banking on the fact that it's going to be called Renegade Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No. They're going to fix the S.H.I.E.L.D. situation before the end of the season.
You think that's where they're going to go?
Because they can't. They're not going to be able to change the name of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This show may have gotten a second season, but it is still a troubled show. It still needs, you know, it's still not a guarantee that it's, you know, it's going to be an ongoing hit.
It's
so they're not going to change the name of the show to, it's called Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're not going to change that for anything.
It's not going to be like it was a Sequest, and then they're going to change it to Sequest 2030.
How often does that work?
Never.
Okay, so answer your question yourself.
That doesn't mean that they won't do it this time, and it's bound to happen. Eventually, somebody's going to get a hit out of changing the name of a show.
No.
No.
When has it ever happened?
But that doesn't mean that it won't happen.
History. When has it ever happened?
That doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Yes, it will happen, and then this show will be canceled. So if you know that's going to happen, why would you? Agents of the Shield isn't in that much trouble that they have to do a Sequest 2038 or whatever, or Galactica 1980. Hello. My God.
I'm just thinking that, you know, the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe has never been intended before, and now it's a success.
Whatever. Marvel, that ship has sailed. Anyway, do you know that they're going to do a reimagining Battlestar Galactica movie now? It's going to be another reimagining from the previous TV show that came in, it came around 2004.
I'm hearing that there are rumors about that being put together, but that's been rumored with that one and the kid, the Knight Rider.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the Battlestar Galactica is more recent news, and it's more probably going to happen than the Knight Rider movie, because I haven't really heard much about the Knight Rider movie in a while, but I've been hearing about Battlestar Galactica all over the place, and the fans are upset that they're going to do a reimagining of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica, because everybody's tired of reboots. And they say, it's time, no more reboots, let's just continue the show. That's what some fans are saying, right?
Right.
Funny thing is, and the reason I am reporting this is because it's cynical and it's hate-filled.
From the desk of my guy one.
Yes, that's the desk of my desk is actually shaped in the side, in the frame of words that say hate. So, fans of the original Battlestar Galactica are happy that A. Glenn Larson is producing this new reimagining, and people are coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden talking about how much they dislike the Ron Moore reimagining.
Really?
It's been all over the place. It's actually astounded me. Like, huge fans of the original show are, and some fans of the reimagined show say that it ended badly or didn't have a moral fiber or moral core, and it didn't have a hero that you could root for, you could care about. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of backlash about it. I don't suspect that a Battlestar Galactica movie at this point is a great idea, because it is very close to that show. But I think it's very interesting that fans of the original are still out in force and seemingly outnumber the fans of the new one. That's very interesting to me.
Well, I think the original fans are more steadfast in their opinions, and the newer ones are kind of wishy-washy.
Well, a little bit. I think that's true.
So that part of it.
Like,
well, you know, I said that might be part of it. So, like, you know, this was great. And then I was like, well, no, this was better. Like, yeah, you know what? That was better. that's kind of what happens. We've mentioned that many times on this show. How
fans today kind of, they're not sticklers for anything.
Like, this was a great movie. Yeah, but what about this? Well, you know what? You're right. That wasn't great at all.
That was the greatest movie ever. Well, you just said that this was the greatest movie ever. Yes, that was the greatest movie ever.
Until this
one came
along.
I'm confused. Right. So are we.
So the final bit of news I have is director Bryan Singer is being sued by Michael Egan III, who alleges that in 1999, when he was only 17, he was given alcohol and drugs, including cocaine, Xanax, and Lohypnol, forcibly sodomizing him in Los Angeles and Hawaii. Appearing this past 2 weeks ago Thursday at a press conference with his attorney, Egan said that his mother first reported the abuse to the Los Angeles Police Department when he was 17, but it, quote, basically fell on deaf ears, and, quote, I buried it deep inside with me. Now, after he quit drinking 2 years ago and more recently entered a program for trauma therapy, he decided to come forward. Of note, in April of 2012, Hawaii amended its statute of limitations for child sex abuse civil cases, opening a 2-year window to file complaints for anyone involving any incidents that occurred many years earlier. That opportunity ends on the April 24th of this year.
Wow.
So that does kind of give a little weight to why he waited so long. Singer's lawyer says, the accusations against our client are completely without merit and completely fabricated. We look forward to bringing a claim for malicious prosecution against Mr. Egan and his attorney after we prevail. And Fox, of course, says these are serious allegations, and they will be resolved in the appropriate forum. This is a personal...
The movie he's just directed comes out, and we've made our money off of it. We will readdress the entire situation.
This is a personal matter, which Bryan Singer and his representatives are addressing separately. However, Bryan Singer has canceled his appearance this weekend, today and yesterday, at WonderCon, where it has been reported that he was scheduled to help promote the new X-Men movie and have 2 hours of one-on-one interviews and a press conference and a press line. So Fox is kind of like, you know, pushing him a little aside while this yes. all gets resolved.
Please go see X-Men anyway. Please pay no attention to these heinous, you know, these accusations of heinous criminal behavior, and go see this guy's movie, because we got a lot of money invested in it.
I mean, they're
and
always...
It needs to be like Avengers.
They're always questioning, you know, why people wait so long, but... The fact that they did change the law kind of like gives them just a little bit. Oh, all right. Instead
people
of
wait
to,
really long in situations of child of you know rape and incest and stuff like that because it's very freaking traumatic, and it's hard for people to come to grips with that. A lot of people who haven't been the victims of those kinds of nefarious activities do not understand how traumatic and how much self-loathing is involved with the actual victims of said. You know, situations, or alleged situations, all right, to be fair.
Right.
And they should shut up, because they don't understand how long that takes. And they should just, if they want to do an internet trial, then go ahead and do an internet trial and show how ignorant you are of the facts, or let nature take its course, let the experts do what the experts have to do, and leave it at that. And go see your movie, and continue to be a fan until such said time, as evidence comes to either exonerating your hero or proving that your hero was, you know, not so heroic. But, you know, that's this whole why did he wait so long? That's ridiculous. We all know why he waited so long. I mean, it goes without saying why it something like this takes a long time. Look how embarrassing that is. Look how public the guy is going to have to be and how scrutinized he's going to be for coming out and saying it. You know, and if he's a liar, look how ruined he's going to be after the fact.
I can't say it any better than that. Well said, Hassan. We're going to take our break. We'll be right back with Game Fun Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Dutch.
Back to our show.
That was well timed out. I don't know if you planned it that way, but that was well timed out.
Thank you, sir. Of course, I'll have that song in my head the rest of the night.
Yeah, what's really great is that nobody out there could hear Mark sing the song like I could over the phone.
Oh, really? I had his mic on?
Yes. And that's never going to happen again. I'm never going back into that pool of nightmare again. That's just terrible. And you weren't even on time with the song. So,
well, there was a 7-second delay.
No, I was listening to you. Okay, and you were not on time with the song. Thankfully, the rest of Mrs. Fabisham and the other six people who listen to the show on a regular basis were not subjugated to that. But for God's sake, never again.
So this week on It Came From The Radio, we're going to be talking about monster movies. More interested in the guys in a rubber suit, which Power Rangers has a lot of. We can just, you know, kind of squirrel into the other classic monsters of, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, and the like. But since the Godzilla movie is coming out soon, I thought it'd be kind of nice to talk about this for this week. For those of you who are unfamiliar, a monster movie is a movie where you have a creature in it of some sort of way, which likes to wreak destruction and havoc on the masses. That's the best.
The Japanese call them kaiju.
All right, and thank you very much. which was mentioned in the movie Pacific Rim.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it was featured heavily in Pacific Rim.
So
Pacific Rim was based on kaiju, the kaiju genre.
Yes, and it had transitioned from a guy in a rubber suit to computer-generated effects, which is
CGI obviously guy in a rubber suit.
Yeah, it's actually true because they actually still have people in the suit. And then they put little green screen over them, and then
performers.
One of the first ones, if I'm not mistaken, was Jar Jar Binks, right? Ahmed Best.
Yes, and then very famously Andy Serkis,
right,
for
right.
Gollum.
Yes,
and also King
Caesar,
Kong, who is technically ostensibly a kaiju also.
That's true. I mean, the big King Kong was.
Yes.
But
who
also,
Andy Serkis played in Peter Jackson.
Right, and he also did the Caesar, which was what I was thinking of for the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, yeah, but Caesar is not a kaiju.
Right.
It doesn't qualify as kaiju.
That actually brings up something I was talking about just the other day about Andy Serkis, that there's an outrage that he has never been nominated for his performances because the consensus of Hollywood is that what he does doesn't count as acting. And I always found that,
Hollywood will have to change that because performance capture is going to become, it's already big, but it's going to become massive in the coming years. So that Hollywood sticklers and, you know, the purists and stuff like that, they will become older than they are now because usually purists are already old and gnarled and curmudgeon-y. So they'll become even older and die off, and then, you know, people with better sense will come in and consider that it's an act of acting, in the process of acting, pretending to, for you know, one thing to pretend to be another thing is a process of acting, and to non-consider that or to, you know, to displace that or disparage that as not acting is pretty much a detriment to the entire profession, and they'll learn.
And it's weird how they were praised when they were in the rubber suit, you know, or makeup.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, well, it's CGI now, so they just are so dismissive of that.
CGI is easier. No, I'm not saying it's an easy thing because I have no idea how it's done, and I think a lot of it is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But CGI does, they are utilizing CGI way too much in some movies without any knowledge of how to wield that sword. Case in point, Green Lantern.
Right. That's a very good case in point.
Yeah, it can be done badly. It can be done to ill effect as opposed to good effect.
So what is your opinion on the status of the monster movie genre?
I think the monster movie genre is alive and well and doing and kicking. Look, Pacific Rim, even though a lot of people like to mouth off about it, Pacific Rim was a hit in itself. It's going to get a sequel. You know, people are excited about that. Godzilla is looking like they actually did it correctly this time. Now, Godzilla was done in CGI previously in America, but no one really wants to call that Godzilla because, excuse the expression, but it was kind of an abortion. So, it was absolutely a heinous depiction of of what most people in America, Gojira in Japan. So most people in America come to love Godzilla in a certain fashion, namely the guy in the rubber suit. And Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich come, and their take on it was horrendous. They changed the look of they took liberties. They took the liberty of changing the look of the monster. They changed the monster's ability. They changed the monster's origin. They changed the monster's goal.
Basically, Godzilla
is a villain. Godzilla's goal is just to destroy. He doesn't want to lay eggs and run around and have little baby Godzillas that, you know, and dig his way under Madison Square Garden and poop all over the place. That's not what Godzilla wants to do. So, you know, for whatever arrogant reason, but that was one of the first CG monster, big budget monster movies. And we know, again, another example of how it can be used to ill effect. This new Godzilla movie, where I have not seen it, and I do not know anything about it, and weeks from now I could be on the show again talking about how it, too, is an abortion to all the, you know, we know and the whole sacred. At least the marketing campaign behind it, and the look of the monster, and the premise of the storyline in and of itself, seems to be in keeping with the original spirit of the Americanized version of Gojira, which we here in America have dubbed Godzilla.
Right.
Okay. So whereas I am not going to say it looks like an actual Gojira movie, you know, in the actual spirit of Gojira, because I have seen very few of the original Japanese versions of those beloved monster movies, because as a kid, nobody loved Godzilla more than I did. And I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure everybody loved them as much as I do. But I'm just saying I was a gigantic Godzilla fan. And this movie seems in keeping with those versions of the movies I saw when I was a kid. Just by the few clips that I have seen, it looks wonderful.
Two things on my head about the Godzilla is, number one, why in monster man movies in general, why in the world do they always make it a big stink over let's keep what the monsters look like a secret? Instead, speaking of the other Godzilla movie, the Dean Devlin one, everything was like, oh, his eye is bigger than this, his leg is bigger than this, but they never actually showed the creature until way later.
Because that's what they want to get you to go to the movie to see, Mark. They want you to come to see
what the creature looks like.
Yeah.
I find it to be counterproductive.
No, because if you see what the monster looks like, and you already know that the thing is about destruction, and it's about the few human beings who may or may not survive.
Right.
You already know you're going to see stuff blow up. You already know that, you know, unless it's a completely nihilistic take on the genre, at the 11th hour they're going to find some kind of chemical or some kind of virus or something to kill it, or they won't, and the world will be destroyed. So basically, the only thing you have left as a mystery, as a get the butts in the seats, is what does it look like? What exactly is it? You know, what is the full, the breadth of the experience? And everybody wants you to experience that for the first time on a giant TV screen. What? That's marketing. Why is that so funny?
Oh, you don't hear that?
No.
Oh, because, Brian has playing Godzilla sound effects, his roar.
Oh, nice.
So I found that to be kind of funny. So I guess you can't hear that. That's sad.
No.
That's actually kind of cool.
I can hear it because I have the radio on now.
Oh, okay. Well, the second thing I wanted to mention was that it was the Godzilla movie was so poorly received that the original company, Toho, disavowed that Godzilla, changed its name to just Zilla, and put that Godzilla into one of their Godzilla movies.
Yes, and killed it.
The real Godzilla came in and smacked them, and that was the end of that. I am reminded that when that movie came out, and then the Toho company was like, well, we're going to make another Godzilla movie. They did incorporate CGI for the first time ever in that Godzilla movie. I think it was Godzilla versus Biollante, I think it was, where Godzilla was actually shown swimming. The guy in the rubber suit was computer-generated swimming as opposed to just walking, which is what Godzilla does.
Right. Okay.
So I was like, wow. They're like, well, we can do it too. It was more like, well, we can do it too. And then, you know, years later, they're like, we don't even like this Godzilla at all.
The only thing that I think is going to be missing from this new movie, and I don't see how they can do it. They might do it. I might be completely wrong. I don't see how they can do it and keep it plausible, you know, and not make it kind of a goofy marketing gimmick. But they're not going to have his theme in it. And that's going to be sad a little bit. I would love to see, you know,
They can still play it while he's going rampaging through the city.
I cannot see them doing that because I don't think that music would fit in the kind of drama that they're trying to make this out to be. They're trying to make it out to seem like a genuine drama. Like, yeah, this monster actually came out of the ocean and is now kicking buildings. And, you know, Americans or the Japanese or wherever this movie takes place, because it's ambiguous exactly where it takes place, are treating this like a genuine drama. Like, this is a genuine crisis, like a nuclear holocaust.
They're trying to make it quote-unquote real.
Yeah. So in the midst of all this drama happening, if they slap on this 1960s orchestral march out of nowhere, I don't think it will be in keeping with the atmosphere that they're trying to create for it. So it won't. Unless they do it to a level of absolute genius that I cannot fathom, that I don't think we'll have it. I am fine with that because it's got to be its own thing. But I still think it's going to be a little bit sad not to have that, because that's like the bestest monster theme there has ever been.
Well, not including the Jet Jaguar theme.
No, including the Jet Jaguar theme. Nothing beats Godzilla, the March of Godzilla. Nothing. The funny thing is the Toho films, when he became a hero, right? They started making him the protagonist. They still kept the music because Godzilla would just accidentally destroy a city. So he became a hero,
right?
But then he'd still end up trashing a city. It'd just be because he was, you know, because he didn't know what he was doing, you know? So he still managed to accidentally destroy as much as he did when he was doing it intentionally. But, you know, they were like, he doesn't know any better.
Well, this is what the Power Rangers always do. It's always the abandoned warehouse district that they're destroying. Oh, it's a good thing they were in that abandoned warehouse district. How many abandoned warehouse districts do they have?
Yeah. Tear down the abandoned warehouse district because it's obviously attracting monsters. Okay? Whatever we have over there is attracting monsters.
I'm reminded of the big showdown between Godzilla and King Kong.
Yeah.
And that classic when they just destroy that giant building before they fall into the wall. It's like, oh, man, that poor guy. And that's a classic scene.
Wouldn't you tear that whole section down and just build a giant park there so that the monsters won't destroy anything? rip up some grass and then that would be it.
With an arrow, monsters this way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we can fight over here. Always.
More than Superman did in Man of Steel.
That is very...
Save the city.
That's another thing. In Man of Steel, Zack Snyder was like, he wants to make it real. So all of a sudden that this destruction is real as opposed to
that's the problem.
A side thing.
You can't do superheroes real. You can put a grit to them. You could put an atmosphere of verisimilitude to them, which makes it seem like maybe this is actually happening now. But the consequences of heroic behavior is usually the people we consider heroes in our society have died because of what they were trying to do. It's very rare that you see on the news, or, you know, you see us celebrate someone who has actually survived his ordeal.
Right.
Like, you know, Captain Phillips, there was like the pilot Sully,
yeah,
who landed his plane in the river.
Yep.
But most of the time, whoever pulls off some kind of heroic deed and saves lives doesn't often get through it himself. So if you're going to depict this stuff realistically, Superman and Batman and these guys don't really fit into the equation. That's why real-life heroism doesn't really work in a franchise genre. You can't have a guy be hero over and over and over again without these, like, you know, severe consequences. And so the answer is he's not a hero. He actually ends up destroying more than he saves in order to justify continuing it over and over again. So it's antithetical to what their goals are. It doesn't really work.
But they still want to try. We have, let's see, 2 minutes left. So do you have a final thought, Hassan?
My final thought is go see Godzilla. And the kaiju movies are alive and well. And see the original movies of Godzilla. And hopefully there's going to be a marathon on the original run, of the Toho run of Godzilla, where he's the hero with the cape on, and he's smacking the crap out of the smog monster. Because I live for that stuff. And hopefully this this giant movie, which I really do genuinely have a good opinion of so far, hopefully that will inspire a lot of good things.
Well, I say monster movies are alive and well, and as Godzilla, as he looks like he's supposed to look, and he sounds like he's supposed to sound, they really can't go too wrong. That's my thought on that. So that about does it for this week on the Came Fun Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGB. If you miss any part of the show, you can go on to our website, www.itcamefunradio.com. You can listen to the archives, which will be up in a week or so. We will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.